Okay. Welcome to episode 24 of the Never Iron Anything podcast. This podcast has been created to keep you occupied during the virus lockdown. My name is Tony Esmond, writer of the Monster Sports Club and Topic Hercules, Vince Rep at No Brow Comics, and editor of The Horizon Cafe by Emanuela Milleri. Coming soon from Marcosia, so look out for that. It comes out the 22nd of June. Today we have the writer of Frank at Home on the Farm. Probably one of my favourite titles of a comic that sounds nice and lovely, and perhaps, let's face it, might not be, in a more of a horrific way than a quality way. And also, writer of the upcoming quarantine comic, it is Jordan Thomas. Hello, Jordan.
Hey, Tony. How are you doing?
Good, man. That's the bit where we pretend we haven't been fucking moaning at each other for the last 20 minutes. Now, we were going to do one book, weren't we? We were going to do something of a much-talked-about classic. And I came to you and I said, oh, I think it's been talked about too much. It's a bit of a sort of vanilla choice. So why don't we choose something else? And you chose a book that had me punching the roof of my car in a Big Lebowski-style way, being pleased that you'd chosen it. Did you want to tell everyone what you'd chosen for us to talk about?
Yeah, so I went with Airboy by James Robinson and Greg Hinkle from Image. Yeah. It's a four-issue, what do you call that, limited series?
Or, yeah, mini-series limited. I think you're right.
Yeah, and it's fucking great.
It's fucking, there you go. And thanks for listening. Yeah, we're both in agreement there.
Done. I'm a bit hungover.
Are you? You went method last night, didn't you?
Yeah, I've gone method on the story. I want to get in the James Robinson mindset. So yeah, if we finish up now, Just tell everybody, go read it.
It's the equivalent of a rock band coming on, playing the last song first and thinking they finished the set because we're that hungover. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I'd like to point out that this will be, as always with me, I'm sure you know, an adult talk with adult language and adult subjects. There is a statute of limitations on some of the things we might describe ourselves having possibly done. So please don't phone the police. Nothing too illegal, I'd like to say. There are some drugs and sexual references throughout, as they say on Geordie Shore. Good. So my first question to you, Jordan, is I can't get over how young your profile picture looks on... you look very young, man, on that picture on your Skype.
Yeah, fresh face. That's before I got properly into comics. So I'm about 5 years later, but I look about 20 years older now.
Good. I'm visualizing that now. I'm going to concentrate on that. Okay. It's hard to talk to you about some of the stuff with this young man. Right. Okay. So where did you first come across this book? Let's put three questions in at once. Don't get confused. Listening at home, so how did you come across Airboy, James Robinson and Greg Hinkle, if they are indeed different places?
So Airboy, I think it was just pretty much a case of having heard a few bits about that. It was actually, I think it was on do you know the iFanboy podcast?
Not to
publicize one of your your competitors. I think I remember them saying like the first issue was really good, and so I went and grabbed it just kind of on the off chance from probably like Orbital Comics maybe in London. I was living in London. James Robertson, I had read a few bits and pieces. I think the Shade series that he'd done.
Yeah, so that was a spin-off of Starman, wasn't it?
Yeah, I actually hadn't. I still haven't read all of Starman. I've got a bit of weird OCD thing in terms of like I've gotten really into collecting the really nice like hardback collections of stuff.
Yeah, there's some nice ones of those, but I'm not sure if they're still in print, are they?
Not still in print.
Right,
so that's
okay.
The problem. They're really, really expensive.
Right.
And don't want to fold and buy like the basic trade paperbacks. So I'm kind of I'm held in chains by my need to buy the fancy version.
Okay, so you wouldn't go for the single issues?
Well, single issues, I guess, would be... I mean, I could buy it all digital. I did consider buying it all just, like, on Comixology or something. Although it's a bit all over the place on Comixology.
Okay.
Well, right. I seem to remember. Or maybe I'm just not very good at searching for things. Yeah, that's definitely... I've read, the first kind of trade or the first kind of story arc in that. So
it's good, isn't it? Very good.
Yeah, no, it's really good, and I definitely want to read the rest of it.
Good. What about Hinkle? Was this the first time you met Hinkle, or you saw Hinkle's work?
Yeah, I didn't come across him at all, and I don't know how... Had he done much before this?
Not very much at all. In fact, have you got the hardback as well of this, Airboy?
No, I've got the issue, just the issues.
Okay, in the hardback, he mentions... there's a little intro from... James Robinson, and he mentions how he'd seen the work that he did, that Greg had done with Jason McNamara. They've done a few series together, and he'd seen that, and I think he suggested him as a good sort of artist for this book. We had Jason. I don't know if you heard the episode. We had Jason McNamara on about a month or so ago on the Awesome Comics Pod, and he's a dude, man. What a dude!
Yeah,
absolutely love his book. His stuff really good. Sucker is one of them. We'll talk about them as we go along, actually. But yeah, some really good stuff. From my point of view, I've got something of an anecdote about hearing about this. Is I was always an Airboy fan from the Eclipse era onwards, not the Golden Age stuff, and didn't really sort of sync with me. But I really did enjoy the Eclipse various, which we'll talk about in a minute, various versions of the stories and stuff like that. And I managed to sit next to James Robinson for a day at New York Comic Con. I was covering someone's table, and we got chatting. And he's quite a storyteller, James Robinson. There's an Around Comics episode which is really worth listening to. If you go through iTunes and have a look for Around Comics, he does one. And I said to him, "Oh, I heard you on Around Comics," and he said, "Christ, I was off my nut on that one." It's like, but when I spoke to him, he was sober. He'd given up drinking and all sorts of things at that point. But we were chatting, and just generally chatting, and he's very much an old school comics guy. You know, really does know his stuff. And I said to him, "What are you working on now?" And he says, "Oh, I'm doing Airboy." And he sort of gave me a sort of sideways look. And I thought, "Oh, what's that?" And I said, "Oh, I fucking love Airboy. I really like Airboy. I think it's really, really some really interesting stuff came out of that in the sort of Eclipse era of comics." And he went, "Oh, it's not going to be like that." And I didn't know what he meant until I picked up that first issue. And like, Christ, it's not, is it? Yeah. It really isn't. Had you read any of the previous Airboy stuff?
No, this is pretty much my only real interaction with Airboy.
Yeah, because it's not like anything else. You know, there really isn't anything else like it. We'll do a little talk quickly about, give the reader a history of Airboy. So it's published intermittently over decades, really. Started in November 1942, debuted in Air Fighters Comics number 2. It's 3 years later, that title got renamed as Airboy Comics because it was so popular. It's by Hillman Periodicals, which I think... does Robinson mention in the first issue, doesn't he? When he's considering writing it. Yeah.
Because, well, yeah, he's not particularly complimentary, is he?
He's not, no. Created by writers Dick Wood and Charles Biro, who also drew the covers, Biro, and art by Al Cammy. Valkyrie was in it. Valkyrie also, as we'll talk about in a minute.
Yeah, she's definitely in this.
Yeah, somebody's definitely in her. The... and also, what is much described as the third muck monster after Swamp Thing and Man Thing is the Heap, which is quite well known. There's a book about, I think it's called Muck Monsters, which is a really good book. So in 1986, Eclipse took it on. I'm a big fan of that company, absolutely brilliant company, and it ran for 50 issues. It started off quite notorious, or quite famously, as a bi-weekly comic series with a limited page count. I think it only had 16 pages. That and a superhero series called, it was either New Wave or Next Wave, I'm just trying to remember. I think it's New Wave. It was written by Chuck Dixon with art by some great artists, actually. Tim Truman did some stuff, Ron Randall did some stuff. There was various spin-offs, Airboy and the Mr. Monster Squad, Airboy meets the Prowler, the Air Fighters meets Sergeant Strike, Target Airboy, various versions of it, and... I think you'll find that Chuck Dixon has just kickstarted or Indiegogo'd issue 51, which I think has just come out off the top of my head. I haven't got it yet, but I do want to get a copy of it. 2007, it got taken over by Moonstone Books. Have you ever read anything by Moonstone Books, Jordan?
Not off the top of my head. I've got a lot of random stuff kind of lying around in long boxes and stuff.
Yeah.
I don't know, what's their kind of biggest...
I'm going to say you're not missing much, mate, to be fair.
Okay.
Yeah. Still written by Chuck Dixon. 2012, Antarctic Press took it on. And then 2014, we got this. There are... if you've ever read the George R. R. Martin Wildcards anthologies, have you ever read them?
No. Tony, you're exposing me.
No, these are fairly obscure, man. These are fairly obscure. Yeah, don't worry about it, yeah. I wouldn't expect you to be fair. They're fairly boring. There's it's the sort of thing that Paul Cornell would write for. It's all very vanilla and boring. But the first one features a character called Jet Boy, who's an homage to Air Boy, which is... they're sort of recreations of superhero characters in different eras, and it's okay. It's an okay. It was back in the 90s when there wasn't that much out there for me to read. I read them as novels, if you see what I mean. Yeah, so interesting history to him, but something that is kind of, I think, if you'd ask him, he would probably tell you would be something of a blank slate. And
if you were to ask Airboy.
No, if you were asked James Robinson, I mean, rather.
I was wondering if you'd been hallucinating. well, maybe.
Now, I'm going to quickly summarise it by saying, and see if you agree with me here, it's not only an autobiography in a way of Robinson and, to a lesser extent, Hinkle, but it's a comic book in the form of an intervention. Do you think?
Yeah, I think that's a pretty good summation. It feels like Robinson trying to exorcise a bunch of demons before trying to fix himself.
Yeah, I think so. And we'll have a little chat through it. There's a definitive structure to the four issues. The first issue is him thinking about it and getting together with Hinkle in order to write it. The second issue is somebody appears in the present day. And then they travel back in the third issue they travel to another world, don't they? Airboy's world. And issue four is the what happens and the epilogue almost of it. So it's from a structure point of view, it is meta, but it's also easy to follow, if you see what I mean. Does that make sense?
Yeah, I mean, they fit a hell of a lot in.
Yeah, they do.
That was when rereading it, like, that was the thing that I thought, it's like, oh, like, you could have seen it. It could have gone a lot longer. Well, not, I don't think you'd want maybe a 30 issue series of this, but yeah, you certainly could have seen it being like six issues or,
yeah, I think so,
the amount of stuff that they get through.
Yeah. Also the best opening page ever, I'm gonna say.
Yes, yeah, well, it's got so many amazing like page turns in it.
Yeah,
probably my favorite thing about the whole book is just the way that they kind of keep coming up with more awful grim stuff to have waiting for you behind each page.
Yeah, it's I'm gonna call it balls and all. It's everything's on show.
Yes,
in this, for those that haven't seen it, did you want to just describe what the first page was?
So yeah, we open up with a really beautiful piece of art. I'm a big fan of Greg Hinkle, but he is,
yeah, me too.
Displaying James Robinson essentially sat on the shitter.
Yeah,
in completely bollock naked, yeah, with his rocket tattoo kind of showing proudly and looking a little bit worse for wear.
Yeah, and talking to Eric Stevenson, who's the,
yes,
the publisher at Image Comics. And what follows, and we're not going to do every page, so don't worry, listener, but what follows is a really lovely transitional page, double page spread, which says so much about each person. It's almost coloured, each panel, depending on where you are, is tinted. For those that don't know, this is a two colour comic, so in some sequences it's sort of bluey greeny grey and white, and other bits it's sort of browny and white, but when you get when Airboy appears, it goes colour, doesn't it? It's kind of what happens.
Like, obviously all of the art's beautiful, but the colour work in it I think is absolutely phenomenal.
Yeah I think you're right. Yeah, so did you want to describe, did you want to have a little talk through that? Because they play Eric Stevenson as if he's got like, he's like the head of Google in his office, don't they?
Yeah, he's got this huge, absolute kind of ginormous suite looking out over, is it San Francisco?
I think it is, yeah, I think so.
And yeah, I mean, it's not a book that pulls any punches. I assume as it was published through Image, Eric Stevenson must have been kind of okay with all of this.
Yeah.
But James Robinson's kind of painting himself as a washed up failure, and Eric Stevenson's kind of telling him as much, pretty much, as well.
I wonder how far they went to this, because having met Cully Hammer, he's actually a nice guy. You know, I'm sure he is a very nice guy. But the at one point he says, you just compared yourself to Paul McCartney. Cully Hammer was right. You are an egomaniac. And he says, Cully said that. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it'd be great. I mean, unfortunately, you've only got me on here to chat for it, but it'd be amazing to get James Robinson to do a real kind of talk through, like, the behind the scenes stuff. Like, is he just choosing people that he's friends with so he knows he can get away with making a few jokes or painting them kind of badly, or is any of this actually yeah, out of reality.
Now that's a really interesting point, because in the hardback it says there's a three sentence summation after the last image, and it says, "I'm immensely proud of this work, holding it up among the best things I've ever done. However, I do believe artistic ventures work best with the least explanation. It's up to you now. Thanks, James Robinson." And I thought that's interesting as well, because we don't know how much of this is true, do we? Yeah. I think parts of it is definitely, I mean, he admits in the introduction that he was looking at that point, it was set, looking like he might be splitting up with his wife, his then wife, and all this sort of thing. And he had gone through some terrible times at DC. I think he'd done Justice Society, I think it was, something like that. And he was a troubled man, I think, a little bit at the time, which is why this book is a cut above for me. You know, it's very earnest and very honest, isn't it?
I think you can take everything that James Robinson says as pretty much true, or in terms of his feelings. Like, I feel like his, obviously, like, it's very extreme, a lot of the stuff, but I feel like most of the stuff that comes out of James Robinson's mouth, you can kind of think is at least something he's fought or is dealing with. I think it's probably the other characters that have maybe had a bit more fun with in terms of how he's kind of presented them.
So his demons are on the page.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah. He goes from there, he goes to a bar, and I have to say one of my favourite pages is just him walking out of a bar and down a San Francisco street. It's absolutely beautiful, like well realised.
But it's got a bit of a dark, well, funny, because we were originally going to do New Frontier.
Yeah.
It's definitely got a kind of a Darwin vibe.
I think so.
In a lot of the art, like obviously Parker does the one colour thing, so there's that. But just in general, like, yeah, it feels a bit like Darwin, but through a prism of alcohol and drugs.
It does, doesn't it? It really does. Yeah. Yeah. He says some stuff that is interesting in issue one. Robinson says, "I fucking hate Airboy."
That's the first line, pretty much, isn't it?
Yeah.
Like, the Airboy comic opens with, "No, Eric, no way. I fucking hate Airboy."
Yeah.
Which pretty much lets you know what you're in for, I think.
Yeah. And he says, "Reboot. I fucking hate that word." Like, hallelujah. You know. And then Greg Hinkle comes to visit in the story. So we see both creators, the artist and the writer, in the story, as well as James Robinson's wife. And they kind of go off to find a hotel or a sort of motel to write the story, don't they, to come up with the ideas, because he's blocked. Robinson can't write. He's too pissed off, stroke drunk, stroke whatever he's going to be, and he decides, "I need some kind of inspiration." So they get the artist.
Well, it's the wife, isn't it? It's his wife that suggests that maybe getting an artist on board
will kind of
him get moving. So that scene with, it's just the way, like, he puts in the caption, "Jan James, brackets, then wife."
Yeah, I know.
Like, it's so brutal, the scene talking with her.
Yeah, it is.
So what's it say at the end, after she makes the suggestion about getting the artist? He says, "What would I do without you?" She says, "Let's hope you never have to find out." And knowing, obviously, that they're not together pretty soon after the comic was published, or maybe even before it was published, I guess, if he's got then wife in the brackets, it's pretty dark.
Unless it was a last-minute rewrite now, but yeah, I know what you mean. Yeah. Yeah. Now, as a writer yourself, have you ever met up with an artist to discuss a story and then gone on to have sex with the same woman after doing lots of drugs? Is that something you've done?
Let me just try and rack through the different people I've worked with. In terms of coming up with...
That was that time with you and Gary Erskine, wasn't it? That was that...
That's how I got most of the big names. Derek Robertson's got some really weird stuff that he insists on if you're gonna work with him. The main artist friend of mine who I'd ever kind of come up with, be like, "Okay, let's come up with the idea together."
Yep.
His sexual interests go a different direction to mine, in terms of he would not have any interest in double teaming any woman. He'd be anti that.
Mind you, you know, have you seen her? Do you know what I mean? Yeah. But one of my favourite, that what you, we then encounter is they go out on the town and don't do drugs, kids. Do you know what I mean? But they do a lot of drugs. They drink a lot.
They do a lot of
They
drugs.
Do a lot of all different drugs, which we discover perhaps they've mistaken for another kind of drug later. And my favourite scene in the whole page is where James Robinson is saying, punch right in the gut, go on, I can take it. And he's trying to get Hinkle to punch him because they're so off their nut. And like, man, statute of limitations and everything, we've all been there. Do you know what I mean? We've all had a lost night, no matter what your poison is. You know, it's happened to us all. And it's a great visualisation of that. Rambling, bar to bar, doing all sorts of things, acting like a twat, kind of double page spread. It's absolutely glorious, isn't it? Yeah.
I remember after England had won one of the games at the last tournament,
yeah,
and I'd been drinking white wine with my mate in a beachside little Spanish village for most of the day.
Yeah.
And the next day, after I dragged myself home, absolutely rancid hangover, and went and brushed my teeth for the third time, hoping to somehow wash away some of the feelings of filth, and noticing that my lip was split, and then having a flashback to him in his England shirt punching me in the face the previous night because he was irritated with some other decision or something I'd made, and then finding a photo of him on a Harley Davidson in my phone that definitely didn't belong to either of us. So, yeah. And I just think the way that the bit where before they go out to get wrecked, there's some beautiful, silent storytelling,
yep,
of them just in the motel room trying to come up with ideas as, yeah, James Robinson kind of paces and sits in every possible kind of chair in the room and before just going, let's go get a drink.
It's that movie technique of moving things on by just shifting people about in small ways to show the passage of time, isn't it? It's very clever. Yeah.
Yeah. Nice. It's I guess it's got quite a filmic.
Yeah.
It's an interesting one in that, it's so about comics, and a lot, yeah, of it only works because it's a comic. But then there's also this kind of the color scheme and stuff. I guess you could do it in film, but I don't think it would work as nicely,
yeah, I think,
as it
right
does on the pages here. But then there are still a lot of moments where the scope is very kind of big and filmic, and the way that they kind of do the storytelling,
yeah,
is something you'd imagine finding in a movie.
Yeah, and we get that we even get mentions of that, don't we, in the story about Robinson's past in movies.
Yes, that's interesting, that story, isn't it?
Yeah.
That he didn't he basically just kind of firebomb his comics career to go off and write and direct a movie about rival comic book shops?
That's right, comic book villains. It's
yes,
it's not bad. And it's there's one character torturing another, and he offers to let him go if he can name the first appearances of different characters or something, I think. Yeah, so it's very nerd friendly. And of course, he also wrote League of Extraordinary Gentlemen, the movie.
Oh yes, he did do that, yeah, didn't he?
Yeah.
Has he apologised a lot for that? Or
I don't know. I didn't bring it up with him. I've got to be honest with you.
He can't have written what it was. I can't imagine that he sat down and wrote with the idea of it being how it actually came out.
Yeah, I know. And also being Bond's last movie, whatever it is, you know.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Is it like how Val Julia's got his In Memory Of on the Street Fighter movie?
Yeah. Okay, so let's talk a little bit about him. So he wrote early on for A1, which is an anthology for Atomica Press. He did some Grendel work, actually, Devil's Whisper, which I completely forgotten about until I researched him. He's probably, we talked about earlier, I think we were off mic at the time, but Starman with Tony Harris and The Shade Maxi as well. The Starman's great, won Eisner. For DC, he's done The Golden Age, which I really recommend, actually. Really good sort of retro rewrite sort of thing. Legend of Dark Knight, JSA, Hawkman, Vigilante, JLA. Wildstorm, he wrote Wildcats, Leave It to Chance, Marvel. You name it, he's written loads of stuff for Marvel. Cable, Generation X, Heroes Reborn, Captain America, which is terrible. Nick Fury, which is excellent. Squadron Supreme, which is excellent. And he wrote some All New Invaders as well, which is, I think, was what he was writing when I met him. He was popular in the signings by people bringing him copies of Firearm and Nightman, which were Malibu books, which there was also a TV series of that, Nightman, which was a sort of one season kind of thing. He's written some Vampirella, he wrote some Ash, and like I said, he's directed some movies. He does self-denigrate himself in this comic, doesn't he? And what's your opinion of him as a writer? Are you fond of his stuff, or Where would you place him?
I think, to be honest, he kind of nails himself pretty fairly, in a sense, I guess, in that, yeah, like the stuff I've not read all of Starman, but the stuff that I have read is really good. And I remember loving that Shade mini 12-issue maxi series that he did with Fraser Irving doing some of the art. And maybe even Darwin dropped in for one of the issues as well. Like, clearly when he's got the right material, he can be a fantastic writer. But when he's just kind of being shipped around onto different, like, random superhero books, then it can be a bit generic.
But, I mean, you know, there's some great comic writers, and I think when he puts his mind to it, like this book and like Starman and stuff, you see some absolute gold from him.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
You really do.
Well, he references being kind of pigeonholed as, like, the Golden Age guy, doesn't he?
Yeah, yeah, he does.
In the comic.
Yeah, yeah, because of those little... He plays about with legacy characters, I think, is what he's kind of got a bit of a name for. Yeah, so as we've discussed, he and Greg end up at the end of the night or the middle of the morning having sex with a lady at once, rather a sudden sort of interaction that turns out into being a pretty horrific sexual encounter. We've all been there.
Well, I mean, that's another one of those page turns that's just incredible. I mean, that whole bit, like you were saying before about the bit where he's like, punch me.
Yeah.
That double page spread, like, I'd love to own that.
Yeah.
Like, that's an absolute
incredible
masterwork. The way the panels, like, he's got a panel that's like a windows, bar windows, like you're looking in through the through the bar. Like, it shouldn't really work. Like, there's far too much
moving the camera around, sort of, is what they call it now, don't they?
Like, and just like the different versions of panel borders that he's got, like, he's kind of going absolutely mad, but it's amazing.
Yeah.
And then what's it they say? Where he's like, where he wants to go over to talk to the woman. He's like, oh, we're just being friendly. And then you flip over to the next page.
Yeah.
Oh, just mad. And they're both, because they're both married as well.
Yes.
Like, it reminds me a bit of, have you watched The Trip with Rob Brydon?
I haven't,
Steve Coogan?
No.
In that, like, they paint themselves as pretty bad, like both married, but kind of cracking into the waitresses in the different restaurants they go to and stuff. It's got a bit of that vibe, and it's like, I'd love to hear what the respective spouses thought. Like, can you imagine Greg Hinkle's wife walking in whilst he's working on this page? Like, whose head is that in between those giant breasts, Greg?
Yeah, I know. And there's one of the best scenes is you then get an overhead. We seem to talk a lot on the show about overhead views of people lying in bed, but we do. We get an overhead view of them all three. She's in the middle. And Greg is his eyes are illuminated by the crack of light coming through between the curtains. The floor is covered in crap. Yeah, like she hasn't cleaned up for years. And he just looks to his left and sees her nipple, which is pierced. And that just sums it up. You see in his head immediately what is going on then, and he gets up and tries to escape. Yeah.
This whole comic's full of phenomenal pages, but that's like another one. And I mean, for anyone who hasn't read it or doesn't have it open, like, there's no messing about with a bit of cover, like covering people. Like, it's very much James Robinson's very much there with cock and balls and all.
Yeah.
Although Greg is being hiding his for
well, we talk about
soon to come reveal.
Let's bring up the story of Greg's dong. The Greg's penis grows in length, and bear in mind he's the man who drew it. Although it is a focal point for parts of the story and a large focal point for one of the points in the story. It's always at people's eye level, seemingly just staring at you, looking at you, isn't it? You know,
oh, it's definitely a character in the book. I would say that the main characters are James Robertson, Greg Hinkle Airboy, and Greg Hinkle's cock.
Yeah.
You take the fourth billing on the poster.
Yeah. So for those that don't know, his penis kind of grows as the book goes on, as it gets more and more strange, more and more trippy. They do discover in a minute that the drugs they did wasn't in fact cocaine, was in fact heroin, but they couldn't see it properly in the light, heroin being sort of lighter brown. And they've actually been snorting heroin. And Robinson says, I'm pretty sure we were snorting heroin last night, which is a first, even for me.
I love as well, like, I think a really cool... just like so much is kind of quite feels really fresh, even like reading this now, kind of 5 years later.
Yeah.
In that Greg Hinkle's clearly like a more uptight guy than James Robinson. and you constantly think he's going to like refuse to join in with the mayhem. But he always like comes around to it. Like I feel like in a lot of books, you know, James Robinson would just be the kind of mad guy, and Greg Hinkle's just this kind of nice guy following him around.
Yeah, trying to it would have been easy to write that, wouldn't it? Yeah.
But he does quite easily get drawn into everything. Like I think there's a bit earlier on where Greg Hinkle comes out of the toilet and he's brought them, well, what turns out to be the heroin.
Yeah.
And it's just like, he's fully on board. He's like, okay,
he's,
you know,
doing his bit, isn't he?
The drugs. Yeah. I wanted to contribute something. Yeah. Greg Hinkle, he's many things, but he's not a freeloader.
Yes, exactly. He's quite polite in his drug buying, isn't he? Yeah, which is always nice. And then what follows is the last page of the first issue, and it is Airboy standing there in full colour, full gold, red and blue, and navy blue, with his blonde hair in the doorway saying, this behaviour will not stand. So when they've reached rock bottom of what they're doing that night, that early morning, he's standing there saying, what the fuck are you doing? Yeah, essentially, but in a more heroic Captain America-style pose. Yeah.
Yeah.
Superb. The covers are great on this as well.
It's fantastic, yeah.
We should mention probably the covers. So the covers are in the spirit of the comic. They have the two-coloured or the one-coloured mostly, but they add Airboy in full colour in just different sections of the page, the first two issues, don't they? Yeah,
and I mean, it's great because obviously you've got the big photo of Airboy on the wall that's kind of in the full colour.
Yeah.
But then it's like even like the Airboy comics that are scattered in amongst all the degradation on the table are also in full colour and stuff as well. Like, it's a really beautifully composed piece of work.
Yeah. And there's a lot of detail in that page, isn't there? It would be easy just to draw a couple of cans, a lighter, and an ashtray, but he's drawing.
There's like a knife sticking out there.
Yeah.
Like this hand sanitizer.
Gaffer tape, one of my favorites. Yeah.
Banana for some reason. Christ knows what happened to that.
So issue two throws us, and is, oh, I always love a comic that throws you straight into the action, throws us straight into the action with James Robinson shouting, run. They both pulled their clothes on there, and they're legging it out of the flat away from Airboy. And
he's got no trousers on. Yeah. I forgot that James Robinson. he's got his trousers in his hand as he's running, and his cock's just kind of swinging. He legs it.
I think at one point he says, "God, look at me, my dick's out."
Yeah.
And Hinkle, the legend that is Hinkle, says, "I think I lost a fucking sock." Like that's their problem. So they take a moment to pause and think about what's going on, and suddenly they're presented back by Airboy. And the fact that he does exist in their reality is beginning to perhaps dawn on them. And that, I'm James Robinson, I'm David Nelson, but folks call me Airboy. That page is just perfection for me. Love that page. Yeah, with them shaking hands. Yeah. Gorgeous. One of them's got one shoe on. Yeah.
I love the detail that Hinkle just brings to all of these pages. Like, I guess it would have been pretty exciting for him, I'd think.
I imagine
to have been
so.
Grabbed by James Robinson to do this. And you can see that he's really absolutely drawing his arse off in every single page.
Yeah, definitely. Now, they go to a bar together. With Airboy in their world, they're turning him to their ways. They're beginning to try and debauch him, aren't they? There's a conversation that takes place. James Robinson explains that bit of perfectly useful knowledge to know what the multiverse is. You know, I'm always talking about that when I'm working, you know. And they have this discussion, and he explains to him, you're a character in a comic book, which says more than it does perhaps to the obvious reasons, you know, well, they're all characters in a comic book in this, you know, it's so interestingly done.
Well, I love the line that Airboy comes and he says, I don't want to seem rude, guys. I don't want to offend you, but are you supervillains?
Yes.
James Robinson's like, do you look like supervillains?
Yeah. And doesn't he say something like, maybe henchmen?
Yeah.
You're not quite supervillain material, James, but yeah. No, so clever. And the it's so enthralling. The art is so good and the writing is so spot on. It does. It's one of those things often. Love watching interactions between two or three characters where you spot what they're thinking as well as what they're saying, and this does that so well, you know.
Yeah, there's so much acting, and like there's so much expression in all of the faces.
Yeah, Yeah, and that's part of it. It doesn't matter. Doesn't always matter exactly what they say, but what they're thinking and what they mean is something else. And what the comic is telling you, in effect, is what is interesting as well. Here, it really is.
It's a whole package, isn't it?
It really is.
Everything's working so well together, like from lettering, the colours.
Yeah. I was going to say, I wonder why they haven't worked together since, but maybe if they have a night out like that every time they want to write a comic, it might be quite dangerous. But
yeah, probably Kinkle's wife wouldn't let him.
No, we're working with that bloke. Is that true? Yeah, the reason my wife never reads any of my comics. I've never killed anyone with a penis.
Oh, yeah. I imagine she doesn't want to let you and Adam out.
Yeah.
On a night on the town.
Yeah. Now, we are coming up to the place that was something... let's say problematical for this book, and something that there was something of a I don't want to call it, I don't know what to call it, a Twitter storm, I suppose people call it, don't they? But it was more than that. There was some complaints railed sent towards Robinson and Hinkle about what happened. What happens here, for those that haven't read it, they Robinson goes into a toilet stall and gets oral pleasures off someone, and in the next door stall Airboy is getting the same. They realise they're in stalls next to each other and start talking over the top of the stall, as we all have done. And then Airboy comes back into the bar and accuses the both of being bastards, asking them if they knew, telling them not to play dumb with them, and saying, that lady I was with, she and I were being intimate to me, that lady had a penis. So this is the problem. They're saying... I'm not sure exactly what the complaint was, but there was a complaint that perhaps was insensitive. Is that right?
I read up actually quite a bit on.
Oh, go on then. Yeah, let us know.
I think generally the kind of cliched idea of transgender people being like a trick, like a trap, you know, that you can kind of set for somebody.
Right. Well, like a sex worker thing, you mean, or?
Or just the fact that they're. As if like they're pretending to be something they're not.
So it's the old crying game, the crying
straight men. Yeah.
Yeah, I get you. Okay.
Like that kind of business. I think obviously that's like a stereotype that the people in that community have to deal with quite a bit.
Yeah.
So they weren't very happy with that. And I mean, looking at the page, I hadn't actually noticed, but you can see the character giving James Robertson a blowjob. Their cock and balls.
Oh, I never noticed that either. Out. There you go.
The skirt, which I just noticed for the first time.
Yeah, me too. Yeah.
I think the thing, I guess my feeling with the whole thing is that it's nothing is very nice in the book.
Yeah.
And it's all just written in the same way. Like, no one is painted very nicely in the whole thing. So once he starts speaking about transgender people, they also get that same treatment.
Yeah,
but I guess it's the old saying of like in comedy where you kind of always have to be punching up.
Yeah, I get you. It's interesting, isn't it? You're right. They're not. No one in this book, well, apart from Airboy, to be fair, is a hero in any way. And even he is.
Even Airboy. I mean, he's got the Greg Hinkle line of very quickly being corrupted.
Yeah.
By just being around these couple of guys. Like, I don't think when they were writing Airboy in the Golden Age. They designed him as someone who would receive a blowjob off a stranger in a cubicle after a couple of drinks.
Yeah.
So, yeah, there's not a single character that really comes out without a bit of dirt on them.
And I can see, look, in the wide world we live in now of, you know, people dying and being hurt a lot, the getting a blowjob in a toilet stall is pretty fucking harmless, to be fair. No matter who does it, and I think there were perhaps... And certainly no matter who does it, it doesn't matter, does it? But in the world of this, they wanted to bring the shock of the current world that white bread, you know, stand-up, war hero, Captain America-esque Airboy felt was something he wasn't used to. And I suppose using the person who gives him a blowjob and their sexual... you know, whatever their sex or their sexual orientation or whatever it's going to be, as the shock point was perhaps considered by some to be a cheap shot, to be a giggle point.
I
don't know.
Back and forth stuff, like James Robinson wrote quite a long...
He wrote a very eloquent letter, which I was extremely impressed with. Well. Yeah.
And then I saw kind of what people, like fairly prominent voices in that community had kind of said about it. Yeah, and I guess it's just... like they feel like they're not they're not getting much respect in general. So even though it's a comic that doesn't have respect for anything,
yeah, I think there's that. I think it's let's face it, it's happened before and it'll happen again. And you know, is it representational? No, but then again, they are traveling between dimensions, and it is a story about himself. So I don't know. I think as the same thing with all internet things, it was a slight overreaction. I certainly didn't find it insulting, although I'm not part of that community.
I guess that's the thing. Like, I'm always very much of the nature of people can write what they want in their art, and then it's up to you to choose whether you want to buy it or not.
I think so. Yeah.
But I'll be, again, like, I'm a straight white man.
Yeah.
So I don't.
But then again, are we so outraged? We've got to sort of, oh my God, you know, let's. Yeah. I don't know. But
I think it's what was interesting was that one of the people, one of the kind of transgender commentators that spoke about it actually gave him some praise.
Okay.
There's a part where Airboy's confronting him, and James Robinson says pre-op, so in her mind and mine, no, but technically. So
yeah,
he's actually being kind of forward thinking.
Yeah. And he also says it doesn't matter. I thought she was beautiful, she had a lovely smile, she liked me, so he went for it. It's not really a big deal. Which I think is kind of, it's totally right, you know.
Mm-hmm.
He himself.
Yeah, so I think they got both, like, the stuff I saw kind of criticising it did say that it came close to being something that they'd have been happy with. But then the kind of regular use, I think, of the word tranny being thrown around soured it a bit for them. But yeah, I mean, from my perspective, yeah, but I'm not part of that community.
But it also does highlight the fact that people do hold preconceptions, and that perhaps people who are older don't understand, you know, because we go from that point to the interesting point that where Airboy almost becomes a supervillain at that point, because he says not a big deal, it's not a big deal, you degenerate piece of shit, which is obviously completely the most insulting part of the comic. Not that it happened, the fact that he's reacting like that. But then again, people do react like that. People don't understand. And that immense sort of outrage by him is what carries them forward into another dimension, doesn't it?
And also, I mean, like,
so hate takes them elsewhere. You know, hate takes them to a place of hate. You know.
Yeah, and also, and on the kind of the idea of the trick element, like the only person in there who is tricked is Airboy, because he's this kind of throwback, not aware of this world that they're in. Like, I don't think. Like they're in a transgender bar, I think.
Right. Okay.
It's like part of it. So yeah, like obviously James Robinson wasn't tricked. It's just the slightly whatever the word is, the hangover, taking my words away a little bit. the throwback character who just thinks his view of everything being happy and nice is this and that, and isn't accepting of, like, because he describes like this being what he imagines if the villains had won, what the world would be like.
Yeah.
So he's got a pretty kind of old school.
Exactly. But it's not, because that's the counterpoint here, isn't it? And that's where the shift takes place. This is the, for a better word, axis. This is the axis in the comic, because the outrage, and I've written down here, they are then transported by anger to a world where World War II is still going on, which is what happens immediately, doesn't it? And whilst Robinson is, you know, kind of a, There's a certain, although he is a married man, a free love element to his conversation. It's the outrage of the high emotion, in the same way that he was transported to their world by the desperation of those two men, you know, and they, like, the way they'd sank lower than they'd ever sank before. They are transported to this other world by him being this, like, uber angry, outraged, not prepared to listen to anyone or consider the feelings of anyone else, and they're transported to a world that is, firstly, fucking just being destroyed by huge Nazi mecha robots, which says something, and is also fucking amazingly drawn. That is one of the best double-page spreads, isn't it? Yeah.
Oh, yeah, it's incredible. I hadn't really thought about the fact that, it's his kind of, his quite, I guess, if he was a person living today, you'd think of him as being quite right-wing. He'd probably be kind of the guys pointing out that. But, like, obviously he's fighting fascism here, but his mindset nowadays, I guess, would be quite, would not be liberal.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it's interesting, that idea of his kind of anger.
Yeah, it's amazing, isn't it? We say that.
That world, like, transporting them.
Yeah, he's an old soul, isn't he? And he's an old man in a young man's body, and that's to a certain extent what we'll be seeing as now. And there's that old phrase, isn't there? You either don't grow old, or you grow old enough to become a Tory. As a man in his 50s, or you know, right winger, whatever it is, as a man in his 50s, I'm still holding out hope that doesn't happen, and I don't become that bloke who hates French people. I actually quite like French people, you know, or bloody China, I don't know, whoever. But there's that about him. He is portraying the previous generation who don't seem to understand the turns that the world has taken, I think, to a certain extent. You know?
Yeah, no, definitely.
Yeah, interesting.
No, it's a really interesting idea, yeah. The way that the movement back into his version of World War II happens.
Yeah, and now for those that haven't read this, we get a reversing in colour. So Greg and James become the only one colour, two colour people in the panel, and the rest is now full colour. So Greg literally goes to town on that final page spread. It is fucking amazing.
Oh yeah, he's loved drawing this, hasn't he? Yeah. I'm not an artist myself, so I don't know, but it does look like getting told, okay, double page spread of your version of a slightly mecked up World War II fight,
yeah,
would be a pretty fun thing to give an artist, and he's absolutely gone to town on it.
Yeah, it's incredible. And doesn't he say that? I think in the next issue he says, James, tell me this is the drugs. And they're still holding out hope that this might still be a product of their debauchery.
On that double page spread, he says, "Did you spike my drink?" And just maybe.
Yeah, can't remember. Yeah. Because there's always lingering in your mind now is always the fact they've snorted a load of heroin, that this is perhaps why it's happened. You know, heroin doesn't make you hallucinate. You know, I don't speak from experience, but I don't think it does. So they're left on a rooftop, which gets bombed by some Stukas. You know, this is the Second World War, but it's a slightly more sort of steampunk Second World War, isn't it? You do get the traditional German fighters, but you also get like mechas and all this sort of thing as well. And he takes them back to the secret hideout, and he introduces them to his team.
So we're on to issue three now.
Yes, we are. Yeah. Airboy introduces him to Skywolf, the Flying Dutchman, Iron Ace, Black Angel, and of course, who gets her own splash is Valkyrie.
She does get her own splash indeed.
Yeah. There's some great Paul Gillespie, take a drink, because everyone takes a drink when I mention him. Paul Gillespie, Valkyrie, she's a great character. She had her own miniseries, which is brilliant. You can find for cheap as chips, and is really well done by Chuck Dixon and Gillespie. Yeah, really interesting stuff. And she is... she's Airboy's girlfriend, isn't she?
She is indeed. And there's that amazing page, but when they're running away on the rooftop, I'm a bit of a sucker for these pages.
Where
you've got the movement like happening without changing panels.
So they're sort of climbing down off the roof, aren't they?
You can watch them running across the roof.
Yeah.
And then you get that one. It always confuses me, that page, the splash page, where they're climbing up the building and you have to start reading it from the bottom.
I get you. Yeah.
And going up. I always read that, start reading that page too. Wrong.
Yeah.
And get confused. And then I'm like, oh, okay. Now I get what's going on. But yeah.
And the other thing worth mentioning here is that Robinson has a boner throughout this.
Yeah, he does, doesn't he?
So we're in the hideout and they're sort of chit-chatting with everyone. And Hinkle's sort of, we're working out verbally the fact they're very different, and clearly in the background Airboy has confessed all to Valkyrie, because all you get is her slapping him, and you realise that's what's happened. I think that's the case. To you?
I don't know if he's told her everything, or she's just like pissed off that he disappeared for a bit. Don't know. I'd like to. It would be amazing if he was so honest that he went in.
That's what
full,
I wondered.
Full story.
Yeah.
But maybe.
Yeah. It's always a bad idea, gents. Ladies.
Although, in fairness, the thing that she does in response to this does suggest that he probably has told her a fair bit of what has gone on.
Yeah. Yeah. Some great dialogue in here. So they're talking to, what's his name? Is it Iron Ace? The one in the armor, anyway, and he says, it's just impractical, and mobility has got to be a bitch. He says, I'll be polite, seeing as how you're a fellow countryman, and simply say that after this, all this time, it's like a second skin. So Hinkle said to him, "What if you weren't being polite, like to me in America?" And he'd say, "I'd say go fuck yourself." Cool.
Yeah, he's a particularly surly INA.
Armoured man sitting there playing chess. Yeah, just in case. Now, what leads on from that is probably one of the more poignant moments in it, isn't there? Did you want to talk a little bit about what happens to him? So they end up looking around, and they end up in the morgue, don't they?
Yeah. Oh, well, before we get to the poignant moment, as well as the erection, I believe Greg Hinkle shit himself.
That's right.
So they keep referencing that he stinks of shit as he... as he walks around.
they really went for it. Fucking hell. I know, yeah. I go for it in my comics, but at least I'm not talking about myself. Yeah.
He's made Atomic Hercules look a bit tame, yes, hasn't he? With, yeah. some of the level he's gone to. Although I could imagine that character you've got in that, the guy with the cushion.
Oh yeah, Noodles.
And yeah, like that feels a bit inspired.
Yeah.
By this.
Yeah.
Got a Greg Hinkle style penis on the on that character as well.
If you know how you rub two sticks together to start a fire,
yeah,
that's how Noodles masturbates. That's why it's that shape. That's a little bit of an origin story for you there. But the yeah, you're right, and that it doesn't stop him though, does it, Hinkle? We'll see in a minute.
No, yeah, no, you're right. The bit in the morgue is because you do get these kind of, they're almost like moments of lucidity.
Yeah,
in
a tragic quality to them. Yeah,
this kind of drug crazed kind of brain. Where you can see that he kind of is pretty self-loathing about pretty much everything about him at this point in his life.
Yeah.
And he finds a dead version of him,
yes,
from their world in one of the morgue slots with the bit of his head kind of blown off.
Yeah.
But he sees that he's still married to the same woman, but he says kind of along the lines of that, oh, she actually looks happy in this world with this James Robinson. Which is a pretty heartbreaking idea, really.
Yeah, and it goes on from there, doesn't it? This becomes really confessional and and very sad, actually. It goes on from there, doesn't it? Because this is what I would describe as the interventional section. They really begin to bring it home with you, you know. Because Airboy speaks to him, and he's sad. He looks sad for him, and he says, so instead you drink and take pills and cocaine, what's the difference? Are you good at what you do, at least? You write. Are you a good writer? And he begins to cry, doesn't he? And he says, "I used to think."
Yeah.
I used to be. I think once upon a time. Nowadays, I don't know. My wife deserves to be happy. I do know that. And it's an incredibly poignant moment. Yeah, you know, it's so well written. And that is the genius of Robinson and Hinkle's work. Is it takes you from high, broad humour to action, to conversational comedy, to moments of high emotion like this. It's so well done. Yeah,
I mean, it's pretty incredible to kind of be able to go from having him walking around with a hard on and Greg having shit himself and the Iron Ace having told him to fuck off, and then like two pages later you're getting choked up as he talks about how he's not been a good husband and he's essentially kind of letting himself down. He even says that he thinks he might be bipolar.
Yes.
Which is like a pretty big deal to just kind of put in a comic reveal about yourself.
Yeah, I know, he's really throwing it out there, and I love people who go there. I don't think there's enough of it. And we only seem to get it on the hinterlands of comics these days, apart from little bits from Image and the odd little bit from Dark Horse or someone. No one really goes for it. They seem to save the sort of high emotion and the confessional and the, you know, the broad and the subversive and the, you know, this sort of thing. They save it for transgressive, even. They save it for their little projects that we never seem to see anymore. I can't think of, I remember when this was coming out, it was coming out monthly, and it was coming out the same week over the period of 4 weeks as one of my favorite books is Minimum Wage, and they're both confessional. They're both they put everything out there, they talk about themselves, you know, they're completely painfully honest, and We don't see the like enough of that. It's done the odd time in small press, or everything that's autobiographical now seems to be about someone sitting on a couch with their cat. Yeah.
I think it's probably twofold, without having thought about this beyond you just saying it to me.
Yeah.
But one, I think, like we've talked about a bit with some of the other issues in the book, that people are probably a bit afraid.
I think you're
right. To be too honest or put anything out there, because you can just easily get torn apart by people who don't have to fact check anything, or like actually give any reasoning. Like they can just be angry and then other people can see it and just go with them and be angry as well.
Yeah.
So I guess people are probably afraid of getting chewed up like that. And also I feel like a lot of stuff now is things looking to movies as well, at the kind of the bigger comic, like even like Image and places like that.
Yeah.
So unless you've got something that's probably going to, that could be turned into a film or a series.
Yeah.
Then that's maybe not going to get taken on at the bigger publishers, like you say, like kind of something like Minimum Wage isn't going to turn into a multi-billion blockbuster.
Yeah.
So a lot of these places, because the cost of making like comics in a lot of ways just don't really make sense. Yeah. They have to be so expensive, and distribution and everything, it's just kind of crazy. So it takes people just like having to love doing it, really, because like all the artists that do it, I mean, I know someone like Jock, for example, like he's probably making about 10 times as much when he goes off and does some storyboarding for the latest Alex Garland film or something,
or a Mondo poster or something.
Then he's getting paid for the comics work he's doing. So to a certain extent, it all has to come from a love of doing it. And that all that stuff is getting kind of pushed further and further down as people don't, these bigger publishers don't really want to take chances on things that have no hope of being a big film franchise or a series or anything.
Yeah, I think you're right, man. And that's well put. Yeah, particularly well put there. The I won't name him, but there's a comic creator I know somewhat, and he put out a series of sort of fantasy and sci-fi books, and he eventually just did a story about his daily life, and it was so...
Is it George R.R. Martin? Are you...
No, if only.
Are you friends with George R.R.
Christ, I wouldn't be friends with anyone who looks like that. And he put out a short comic about his day and about it winding him up, and it was by far the best thing I've ever seen him written, because he put it out there. There was real emotional. There was an emotional content to it. You know, people hold it back, you know. And you're right there, man. We do worry about upsetting people. But don't things that villains do upset people? Isn't that the idea? You know.
Well, there's an interesting story, actually, from Quarantine, the comic I just finished up with on Kickstarter.
Yeah.
But I got a message at the beginning from a very nice lady asking if there was any nudity in the comic. And at first, I wasn't sure if it was because she wanted nudity or she didn't want
it. Luck's in.
I was like, I haven't, but if you, I've got a friend called Tony who you might want to get in touch.
He'll send you Polaroids.
He has a Polaroid collection. is that worrying for you that we both went?
Yeah,
there?
No.
So she didn't want nudity because it was like it was going to be for her son, and I was like, oh no, there's no nudity in the comic. But like then I was kind of thinking, there's a lot of violence, though.
Yeah.
You know, there's a bit where the blob tears the face off of a scientist, revealing just their skull kind of left behind and stuff like that. And I found that kind of weird how she specifically pulled out nudity. And then I'd also forgotten that I had written in Craig Patton's page, because it's a different artist does every page of the story.
Yeah.
This kind of big scene outside of the building where you can just see in all the windows as everything just falls apart and everybody goes mad. And I had written about putting an orgy in one of those. And Craig had really gone to town on these two guys kind of double teaming this quite large man. Whilst another man watches pointing, and the closer I looked, I realised he was putting some of the goo that they eat into his bottom whilst he was watching. So I was like, oh,
we've been there.
I'm going to have to email this woman and tell her.
Yeah.
And I showed it to her, and she wasn't best impressed, and she did cancel the pledge on the book.
Right.
But I found it kind of just weird, like how like stuff like that, like violence just doesn't, people don't seem to give a shit about violence.
It's the argument that Alan Moore put out before Lost Girls, wasn't it? Or when Lost Girls got challenged, and he said, look, we put books out with a lot of violence in, but no one, you know, everyone seems to be upset when we put books out that have a lot of sex in them. And I'm of two minds about it. I think they're different things. I don't think we should automatically parallel everything against everything else, but we do, because of historically in this country and in other countries we have the grading of movies and stuff, don't we, that is graded in that way. And the morals or the mores of society change depending what period you're in, and sometimes what country you're in, depending, you know, either regimes or just sort of personal, you know, group social opinions. It's a funny one, isn't it? It's I'm I've got a grown up son now, and having sat through a movie that had, you know, a sex scene in it, is a lot more uncomfortable than sitting through a movie that's got, you know, a werewolf attacking someone. It's strange, isn't it?
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah, no, definitely. I mean, this comes from someone who once put on Requiem for a Dream with his mum. I don't know what the hell I was thinking.
Art house, mum.
Yeah. You just get to the end. It's a bit towards the end when they got Jennifer Connelly on the table and someone in the crowd shouts, "Ask to ask," and you're like, "Oh Christ, what have I done here?"
We've all heard that from
but,
the crowd.
Yeah, I guess, although that's a bit different, like werewolves and stuff. But like,
yeah.
There's like stuff like Criminal and things, you know, where maybe it's like it's more realistic violence.
Yeah.
And again, that doesn't really seem to, like, she never asked me any questions about, like, oh, what's the level of violence in the book? Like, what's, is there bad language or anything like that?
Yeah.
It was just specifically nudity.
Okay.
Which I just thought was interesting as well. Like, just the kind of thing to think about in terms of what
we could do with the sales. Just let her know that Atomic Hercules doesn't have anything like that in it. And
that would be amazing. The thing is I wanted to get on my high horse about it and be like, oh, you know, it's just like some sex. But the more I looked at the detail that Craig had put into the picture,
yeah, your stance is a little bit weaker. Yeah,
my heart is really falling apart when I notice like the goo in the bottom and the and just the general.
There's a name for the episode. It's the goo in the bottom. I'll be calling it that. Yeah, it's fine. Yeah. Good stuff. Right, so we're almost finished, actually. We're almost, oh, look at us, an hour, doing well.
With the next image, as I scroll down the comic, is Greg enjoying Valkyrie.
Yeah, they're enjoying each other, I'm going to say. Yeah. You know.
Yeah, with Greg, with what we've seen from Greg throughout the rest of the issue.
But two things I found concerning about this. One, he's got a penis the size of a leg, so that can't be comfortable. And two, for some reason, the fact that he is drawn as a black and white comic character and she's drawn as colour somehow seems wrong to me. I don't know why. It's like a clashing of my two lives. You know, growing up reading, you know, Hotspur and Lion magazine in black and white, and clashing with Valkyrie, this sort of uber sexual woman. It's like a cross between the sexual and the innocent suddenly. But Greg's far from innocent in this comic. Do you know what I mean? Yeah. It's a strange one. Yeah.
Yeah, no, it's a no holds barred kind of shot.
Yeah, it is.
They've got, and it's just the way it's like happened so quickly. And also, it's like literally, again, like we were saying, we've just come out of this really emotional scene where James Robinson's absolutely poured his heart out, and Airboy's actually been quite decent and kind of tried to cheer him up and be very positive.
Yeah.
And it literally transitions directly into Greg banging Airboy's girlfriend,
but it comes back on
the bench.
It comes back on James as much as it comes back on Greg. That's the way I felt about it, because it's almost his fault. You know, he's the one who started all this. He's the one who got Greg on, you know, to go out. He's the one who got him to come to, was it California, wherever it was they were. You know, he started this. It's almost like he can't do anything right. The image of Greg having sex with Valkyrie reflects worse on James Robinson somehow in my mind. Yeah.
Yeah, he's the one that's kind of set this whole kind of runaway train going.
Yeah.
So everything kind of falls back on him. Some of the dialogue in the when Airboy and Valkyrie are arguing about it.
Yeah.
Where she's like saying she was pissed off because he vanished and he deserved it and she's a free spirit and stuff. And then she's like, "You needed a lesson. So I got the most disgusting, repulsive man I could find." just see Greg's like disappointed face. And yeah, and again, James Robinson looking especially disappointed in the background.
Yeah, if that's the sort of thing that very attractive wartime superheroes, female superheroes do, I really need to hang about some more. Because if they're looking for someone to have really disgusting sex with them, and you know, and
for the most repulsive man possible.
Exactly. Yeah, exactly.
Then, you start hanging about some of those kind of secret recreation groups, or whatever they do.
Right, so a little bit about Greg Hinkle before we dive into issue 4 and we're almost done. He lives in California. The two books that he did with Jason McNamara, which I thoroughly recommend, are The Rattler and Nocturnal Commissions, the first of which I received 2 days ago from Kickstarter. Very good. If you go back on the Awesome Comics pod, you can hear an interview with Jason, and he is the nicest geezer. I got a pull quote from the written review, but the pull quote from that both me, Vince, and Dan all said, what we said, when I opened it, I said this, and we all said, "Fucking hell." And the pull quote on the back of Nocturnal Commissions is the Awesome Comics podcast, fucking hell. I thought, brilliant, genius. He's done a great pin-up in the back of Sucker, issue one. He also did Black Cloud Image, well worth picking up. And he's done some covers for the Beauty series, another Image series. He's definitely a geezer on the rise, I've got to tell you. The I expected after this for him to be all over the big two, but I think he's genuinely keeping it quite real, isn't he? And
yeah, it's an interesting one because I think as much as I love this,
yep,
this series, I haven't really. Okay, I guess because I moved to Spain pretty quickly after this came out,
right.
So my going actually into the comic shop had kind of dropped off. So I've been finding stuff in a slightly different kind of way.
Yep.
So I haven't actually, I'm going to have to get all of these different books that he's done since, because I love his work so much. But I did see the other day that Nocturnal Commissions, that's brand new, right?
Yeah, just come out. Yeah, yeah.
Was that a Kickstarter?
It was, yeah.
Yeah, because I completely missed that. I don't know how I missed that. But I actually chatted to Greg over Instagram, private message the other day.
Right.
Because I was looking for a final artist for that quarantine comic.
Oh, nice. Okay.
And I approached him because... this has kind of reminded me of how much I adore all of his work.
Yeah.
And he was too busy, but really nice, responded to me,
yeah,
chatted for a bit back and forth.
Yeah, we'd love to get him on the show. I mean, we all recommended this independently on Awesome. And we'd love to get him with Jason on, to round the circle, we'd love to get him on as well. Because I think The Rattler is amazing, man. What a book. And Nocturnal Commissions is shaping up to be... Nocturnal Commissions is... a vampire, a werewolf, and a zombie as a detective agency, and which sounds very simple, but he does it. It's written and done with such sort of funny humour. Yeah, really good stuff. Good.
Yeah, no, I'll have to pick up all of those. Yeah. To be honest, so
it's funny how we think, isn't it? Because I was thinking of him as for a cover work for the Atomic Hercules Travels to Uranus, which is coming out later this year.
Yeah.
Good. So because of Greg's inability to control himself, James Robinson getting them into the shit, and the sexual incident consensual with Valkyrie happened, they decide that it should be Greg and James who have to put on German uniforms and go and plant a bomb. So
also, we've skipped over that his penis has once again grown the size that we see when Airboy punches him. It's now kind of gone beyond the realms of reality.
Yeah.
And has taken on its own gravity, I think, yeah, at this point.
If there was a guide to the Image Universe, like they used to have the Marvel Universe, it would get its own page, wouldn't it, I think, by this point.
Yeah, I think it would have,
yeah,
certainly its own section.
Yeah. So some of it is that some lovely work here of buildings. It's like they're walking through Dresden or somewhere like that, isn't it? They're walking through this sort,
yeah,
of bombed-out city, both dressed as in German uniforms, and they're commenting on how cool they look. You know, they do say who's the Hugo Boss, isn't it? Hugo Boss made German,
yeah,
uniforms, famously. So we get a couple of flashbacks. It all goes through to them getting there, and finally, James Robinson does some coke with one of the characters, doesn't he? Doesn't he do coke with one of the gang, one of the team? I forget her name. It's something,
yeah,
Cat, isn't it? I forget her name. But yeah, so he does some coke. Yeah,
off a mirror, I think.
That's it, yeah. Can't remember her name. It's not the Flying Dutchman, is it? The Black Angel, I think it is. So they do some coke, and then they head out to... they step up. They decide, look, let's go and do this. They go out. They go to plant the bomb. There's the Airboy and his comrades fly over. And let's not spoil it too much, but Robinson steps up, doesn't he? He proves himself... to be the guy again in this, do you think?
Yes. Yeah, and in the bit with Black Angel just before, he has a bit of another kind of heart-to-heart, and he actually references that comic book villains movie,
yeah,
and you can see he's kind of preparing himself to try and do something good.
Yeah.
This is kind of he's kind of at his lowest, and this is the second act turning point.
Yeah. Yeah, you're right. That's exactly it. And at the end of that, they both end up back in the bath. So it's the Wizard of Oz ending, isn't it? Was that all reality or not? Yeah.
Yeah.
They spend a lot. All due respect to perhaps you, Jordan, or anyone else I know, I'm not going to spend a long time in the bath with you if I'm now completely sober. Not that I need to be drunk to get in the bath with you. I'm sure you're a very attractive man, but it's not my favourite place to sit with a collaborator. Me and Nick Prolix have never had a bath together. I'd like to point that out to get that on the air. But they,
I imagine you guys as more like jacuzzi users. I kind of see you and Nick, maybe Russell, kind of all hanging out like in a jacuzzi after a successful thought bubble, or
maybe a sort of we're more like Morecambe and Wise. Do you remember how Morecambe and Wise you always used to sleep together in the pyjamas?
Okay, very quaint.
and there's a realization, and they're there, and he blows away some smoke, some powder, as Greg leaves, and so when Greg leaves, he says, "I came up here to work with the James Robinson. So when he's ready to work, give me a call." And he leaves, and there's a single panel of him looking up, a single panel of him looking down. He calls out to Greg, and then he blows the cocaine off the table, it's just fighter pilots over my house.
You've transitioned over to Airboys. Well,
yeah, so much drugs, man. You're left with a little image. The final page is an image of a sort of cartoony version of Airboy with, I'm going to say, a smug grin on his face. How did you interpret that?
Yeah, it kind of feels a little bit like when you'd watch some kind of old movies and maybe someone will have been kind of in disguise to try and bring about a change in someone's life. And it looks a bit like he's sat on that comic saying, like, my work is done. James Robinson's going to get back to being the real James Robinson.
Yeah. Yeah, he does, isn't he? I think so. And he's put things right, maybe. Possibly.
Yeah.
You know. So we had a lot of themes in that, didn't we? We had drugs and sex. We had addiction to both, possibly. We had inner demons. We had a confessional element to it. We had provocative moments. We had being insecure, you know, imposter syndrome, perhaps, or insecure of your own ability. And we had writing block. We had a lot there, which ends really well. I think some comics are written to be stories and some things are written to be limited series. And I think this is a perfect example of a well-paced out story. What was your sort of general opinion of it? Did you go away and look for anything else by any of these creators? Or did you go away and look for anything of this theme? Or you were reading it monthly, weren't you? Is that right now?
Yeah. I mean, because I was a big, you know, what is it, Wednesday Warrior or whatever when I was living in London and buying, like, probably coming away with kind of 10 issues of stuff every Wednesday. I mean, I remember that I absolutely loved it. And I do think, especially like as we've talked through it now, it is pretty much perfect. Like, I don't think, I can't really think of any complaint or anything I'd have about any of it.
Yeah.
Like, as a story, like, it wraps up kind of beautifully.
I wasn't upset. Some people were upset about it. I personally wasn't. It seemed in keeping with the story what happened, which I think is one of the most important things to consider, you know.
Yeah, I just think, kind of forgetting about any controversy, just taking it as the work itself. I just think it's fantastic from just everything, just working at the top of its game. And, I mean, it's a lovely scene at the end where the two of them, you know, when you say about he wants to, when the real James Robinson's ready to work, give me a call.
Yeah.
And it's got, like, hope. It's, like, got a hopeful ending.
Has. Yeah.
After everything kind of that's gone on. I think I picked up The Shade. I can't, my timelines are a bit screwy, but I feel like I picked up The Shade knowing that it was James Robinson, that he was doing, because his mainstream stuff at that time, where I was more just buying stuff as it came out, as opposed to doing too much kind of chasing up old series. Wasn't best. I remember he was working on one of the new 52 relaunches.
Okay, yeah, okay, yeah.
With I can't remember what it was. It was like Green Lantern.
Maybe it was
Justice Society. Yeah, it's Earth 2, but it's basically Justice Society, I think. Yeah. Isn't it? And it was like fine, but not the best.
Yeah, okay, yeah.
But since then, I've kind of chased up some more of their stuff. I just remember really loving it. Really,
because it isn't. isn't, firstly, it's clear, the way, if anyone has listened to and paid any attention to us for the last hour and a bit, it isn't an Airboy comic. There's no way this is an Airboy comic. It's it is, when I first, you know, sort of kind of got the idea, I thought, oh, that's a clever trick, but only a trick you can play once. And, oh, look, the comic character's come to life and he's in the real world and he's pointing out to us what hypocritical, stroke debauched, stroke idiotic people we are. And that is a kind of trick that we've seen over and over again. But this goes so far beyond that trick that it becomes, the trick is something we just accept, but we throw ourselves more into the emotions and the conclusion and the sex and the drugs and the, you know, there's so much more to that, because we've all seen that trick before, haven't we, where the hero arrives, you know, the hero from the past arrives in the future and points out to us how idiotic modern society is and you should be honourable like us. But there's so much more to it than that, isn't there?
Yeah, I just think it's what we were talking about, in that, like, nobody in it stays clean.
Yeah.
Like, there's no character who has the moral high ground, because everybody makes mistakes and does awful things, or whether it's, you know, Airboy with his very kind of rigid like opinions on everything and his very kind of golden agey type viewpoint, or like we said with Greg getting fully on board the drink and drugs train instead of being like this kind of new artist starry-eyed following around James Robinson who's doing all the debauched stuff. Like, everyone is all in.
Yeah.
And I think that's what makes it stand out a bit, in that it's not preachy.
It's not.
No one's there to lecture you, because nobody can.
Yeah.
Because we've seen all of them do something terrible.
Yeah.
And I think that just, and it just, like, the level of honesty in it is credible, really. Like, when you go through the kind of, there's like, each issue has just that kind of one scene where James Robinson kind of carves out a bit more of his soul to show you.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Which that's a really good point, man. Yeah, totally. I also think, as coming from a couple of writers here, it's worth of note to say that it's okay to bond with your artist. Just don't get to a point where you're going to find it hard to make eye contact with him because you've done so much stuff. I mean, you know.
That's why I work remotely with most people.
That's why me and John Byrne ended our, you know, working relationship. Yeah. Right. Good. Right. So that's good. We're going to have a little pause now for our sponsor this week, and then we're going to just have a little chat about some of your books, dude, if you don't mind. So now a pause for one of our sponsors. The world is in utter turmoil at the moment, conflict and illness at every turn. Do you need a break? Then why not throw yourselves into the arms of a corrupt organization that encourages the abuse of children and women and brainwashes people into believing in a totally made up set of rules, or you will go to hell. Why not become religious? Brackets, wanking not allowed. Okay, thanks for that. That's our advert. Good.
Okay, is that a new sponsor?
New sponsor, yeah. The church have come totally on board. Yeah, I'll
They like the John Ottaway episode.
Yeah, they did. Yeah, very fun.
They like that. They've decided.
I think it might be the John effect, the Ottaway effect, as I like to call it now. They've realised that I will literally do any advert. You know, Blue Penny can sod off. They're not paying me enough, but the church, you know, religion, they've got a few quid, haven't they? Good-o. So. Yeah, yeah. Two places for me to cover with you. Firstly, what is Frank at Home on the Farm? Because it belays the lovely Emmerdale Farm quality of the title. It is not that exactly at all, is it? So just give us a little rundown what that's about, dude.
So that's pretty much, it's not an Emmerdale spin-off or a homage. It's about a soldier who returns home from World War One to his family farm to find that all of his family are missing. And as he searches in the town and speaks to people, nobody seems to remember them or have much interest in helping find them. And then it goes quite kind of Shining, in that he just stays kind of locked up on his farm, slowly losing his mind, whilst the animals seem to be getting up to all kinds of misadventure around him.
There is a transgressive element to this, isn't it? You know, it's quite, I think the art style speaks to it as well, doesn't it? Who's the artist on it again?
Clark Bint.
Yeah, lovely art, man. Great find. Where did you find him?
Oh, yeah. He's incredible.
Where did you find him?
So he had worked with a friend of mine on a graphic novel called Murder Most Mundane at Mad Robot Comics.
Yes, I've heard of them. Yeah.
I think it's just one of those lucky things where one of the writers on that, Clark, is just the brother of his friend.
Right, okay.
It kind of just felt like He's just like, oh, my brother draws.
Yeah, good stuff.
You want to take a look? And they're like, oh, Jesus, look at that. So yeah, so that's how I kind of came across Clark. And yeah, quite a big old endeavor because we've just had the final issue.
Issue 4, is that right?
Four issues. The final one just got printed this week.
Good stuff.
So me and Clark were working on it for about a year and a half, I guess, all in.
Nice. And for those who haven't listened to your interview on the Autumn Comics Pod, I'm sure most of you will have done, what's the Quarantine comic about, and what stage are we at with it now? Because you just added a couple of sort of interesting new titles, haven't you? Not titles, talents, rather.
So Quarantine's been a bit of a mad one in that I was pretty much just sat around looking through Twitter and saw a lot of artists had a bit more time on their hands. They were kind of posting up their versions of Marvel DC characters, or even like drawing pages out of if I was to draw a Daredevil comic or a Doctor Strange comic, this is what it would look like. So I kind of thought it might be nice just to try and grab up everybody for like one big project together and try and get it all done during the lockdown. So yeah, I guess it was completely conceived and created and crowdfunded whilst we've been in lockdown. It's about basically, it starts with this apartment building, a bunch of sciencey shit outside, and there's a zap, and they get quarantined into like an alternate universe where the building's just kind of floating in space. And we follow this one family as they're kept in their apartment by these guard bots and forced to just eat this goo stuff, which is the only food that gets kind of pumped into their apartment, until they all start to meld into one giant blob.
Right, okay.
So I guess it was my take on the lockdown and being kind of forced to all live on top of each
there
other in your kind of families and with your housemates and whatever for months and months, taken to the extreme as it turns into a rampaging blob by the end of it. But yeah, I had a different artist draw every page. Yep. So,
do you want to name some of them?
The mains. Yeah, I mean, we got on the main story, we've got amazing people like Russell Mark Olson, Gustavo Vargas, who you had on the other day on the Awesome Pod, which was fantastic. Donna A. Black, Emma Kubert.
Emma Kubert, I remember you mentioned
Shaky Kane.
Emma Kubert before. Yeah, I follow her on Instagram. I've done for years. She's a great artist. Yeah.
Yeah, she does some really nice. I really like her colour work. And yeah, she's like, but then a very different style to the other guys. Like, kind of part of the idea was to try and, like, when I assigned the pages to everybody, was to make it so you got a really different styles kind of juxtaposed with each other. So once the kind of blob rampage starts, it kind of kicks off with Gustavo having it kind of break free.
Yep.
And then the next page is Rosie Packwood, who did Blinker and The Incredible Bun, more all-ages style approach. She's got, like, she's a really great artist, but she's not someone you'd necessarily immediately associate with kind of a giant rampaging blob.
Yeah.
And I had her do an old boy homage kind of style, where it's like a hallway thing of this blob destroying all these robots. And so that's like straight after Gustavo.
Right, nice.
So to try and kind of have some fun with that, which was really cool. But then it did pretty well because obviously a lot of different people on there, a lot of different fan bases.
Yeah, no, it did really well. You were, and, what, 240%, were you? Something like that, was it, I think?
Yeah, it was 515 backers in the end, just over $9,000.
Good stuff.
That was really good. And we kind of started adding the stretch goals, and we had some prints done by Ian Laurie and Warwick Fraser-Coombe, and then John McRae doing well. And then like the final thing that I put, the covers by Derek Robertson, which came
Love
out
his stuff.
Fantastic.
I always try and buy his sketchbooks when I'm in New York. Yeah, he's really good. Yeah.
He's awesome. I was just rereading his Fury with Garth Ennis.
Yes. I know, that is good.
But they always finish on like a big single image, normally of Nick Fury kind of staring pissed off down the camera.
Right.
And they're beautiful, these images. But the final stretch goal that we put on for the 9K to try and get to was a bonus 3-page story for the comic.
Right.
And I got Luke Parker from Merrick, the Sensational Elephant fan. J. Francis Totti, who's just been doing that big fuck off worms with Matt Garvey. But then I was trying to find a third person, and a few people hadn't gotten back to me and stuff. So I just saw that Sean Phillips has his email on his Twitter
right, okay.
for some reason. and just sent him an email at like midnight or something one night, just being like, oh, you know, total, like, I'm a huge fan, this is the idea. I'm sure, you know, you're Sean Phillips, you're probably far too busy, but I thought I'd message anyway. And just woke up to an email from him the next day saying, oh, sounds good, sure, I'll do a page.
What a result.
So, yes, we got Sean. Cool. Yeah, so we got Sean Phillips as like the final artist, which I think helped us get to that final stretch goal. Yeah,
good stuff, man. So, I love his stuff. He's been putting out consistently a brilliant work for years, Sean Phillips. We did a sort of interview with him at London Super Comic Con, and all he wanted to do was talk about old Bronze Age comics, and it's the best one. I wish it had gone on for hours, to be fair. Yeah, it was just when he put out that sort of black and white magazine.
But he's proper knowledgeable, isn't he? Like when you read all the back matter in Criminal, and he's always doing like covers for new Criterion editions of classic movies and things like that. Like one of the reasons I actually thought to contact him that I thought might go in my favor was I'd heard Ed Brubaker on a podcast the other day talking about how he has to turn his scripts around so quickly because Sean Phillips will knock out a whole issue of something in like 2 weeks.
Right. Okay.
Like he's absolutely like a machine. So I was like, oh, actually, in terms of the famous people out there, you know, like I spoke to Frank Quitely at one point.
Right.
But, you know, Frank he's probably my favorite artist. Maybe. Okay. But he's not famous for his speed.
Yeah.
So when you're trying to get someone to kind of turn something around quick, oh, if Sean Phillips can do an issue in 2 weeks, then maybe he might be able to find
find
a bit of time to do a page. But talking like a storytelling like we did with Airboy and Greg Hinkle, like the storytelling in Criminal is incredible. Like I remember there's one where someone's on like a bit of a bender and they use like black panels to kind of symbolize bits where his memory is like incomplete and stuff like that, which I love all that kind of stuff. Yeah. Comics.
Is it a black and white piece or is someone else colouring it? Or
No, it will be coloured. I'm not sure currently if he's going to colour it himself. I just wrote the script yesterday.
Okay, I saw you put on our little Facebook group. I've just started to write a story for Sean Phillips and it just said page one, panel one.
Yeah, it's ready to go. Yeah, so it's the first time, because obviously like Shaky Kane being on the main book and Derek doing the cover, like proper amazing people, like really
been about as well. They know a good script when they see one, all that sort of thing. I know what you mean. Yeah.
But I'd written it already. Like the script was written. Right. So I didn't have to write it thinking, oh, I'm writing this for this person, whereas I actually had to sit down and be like, Sean Phillips is drawing the last page of this. Yeah. Like, I need to...
Okay, yeah.
It needs to be good.
Yeah. Is it Jake? Is it? I can't remember his son's name. Jacob.
Yeah, Jake.
He colours a lot of his stuff.
He started. Yeah. I think Sean used to do some of his own colouring. I think he colours himself when he does.
Was it Elizabeth Brightwise that used to colour her stuff, didn't she?
Oh, yeah, maybe.
Yeah, I don't know. I'm sure he's done his own. Yeah. Oh, cool. Brilliant stuff, man. Yeah, no, so let's do the links then. So if we want to buy Frank, or we want to try and pre-order Quarantine, where do we go to? Have you got a site of you or a big cartel or anything?
Not currently, because the Kickstarter literally only just finished for Quarantine. So that will probably be available at conventions more until I set up like a big cartel page. But yeah, basically, if you just follow me on Twitter at Jordan_J_Thomas or ampsand1988 on Instagram, then you can kind of keep up with stuff. And once it becomes available, just involves a lot of me having to be organized, setting up like websites and things like that. But we'll definitely do a collection of Frank.
Yeah, that'd be good. In the near That's a good shout. I've only read it digitally.
A really exciting
artist,
but, yeah.
So I'd like a collection.
Yeah, I've been talking to a really exciting artist who's one of my personal favourite cover artists of all time, who I think is going to do a variant cover for the collection, which could be really exciting.
Tell me afterwards.
I think he's the best cover artist of all time. I don't know.
You got Rob Liefeld on board. Brilliant stuff, man.
Oh, yeah. It's basically very feet focused. He's going to be drawing hoops on many animals. And Frank's going to be there with that giant Captain America chest.
Yeah, ideal. Yeah.
Just stood in amongst all these animals that are on their backs.
Why have you drawn snake eyes on the farm? I'm not sure. Why is this? Yeah. Good stuff, man. Brilliant. That was really good. And I appreciate that. And we've rattled on for, as usual, half an hour longer than I thought we would. But good. And that is a worthy book. Airboy is the one that I always buy. It's an easy go-to for certain friends as a present, I think. And I've got the issues, but I also double dipped and got the hardback. It's one of those hardbacks that's printed on the cover. It's not, there's no slipcase to it, or dust jacket. And yes, it's really reasonable. It's only, I think you'll probably find one for 20 quid or something. Very good. Got loads of back matter in it as well. Loads of sketches and cover versions. They did a couple of variants. One variant is the cover to issue one, but with actual photographs of them on, which is pretty cool. I think it was like a San Diego special or incentive for a comic shop or something like that. Yeah, very good. Yeah, that's a good shout, man. I really enjoyed reading that one. Yeah, good stuff. And the statute.
Yeah, it's great with kids in that. Definitely.
Yeah, and the statute of limitations has now run out, so we are safe.
Yeah, we mostly behaved ourselves.
I think so.
In terms of recounting.
Yeah, we didn't
any
go.
Of
do you remember that time I was off my nut on heroin? None of us said that. It went well.
I mean, last night after about, I'd had four margaritas because I decided to get myself a cocktail making kit whilst in lockdown for some forsaken reason. And it turns out about 2 o'clock in the morning after four margaritas, that's when my social conscience kind of goes away and I'm trying to find if there's some kind of a legal club or anything in Granada that we can go to. So that's when my care for the community and keeping the virus in check falls apart, apparently, is four margaritas.
I mean, having been a big drinker in my time, but having, you know, not having done much practice recently, I think the most of the world is probably going to be like that. So when we actually do go to a pub, we're going to be a bunch of lightweights, aren't we? We're going to be drunk in about 10 minutes. Yeah.
Yeah, the first convention after all this kind of gets lifted.
Yeah.
It's going to be at mayhem.
Kick off, isn't it? Yeah. Good stuff. Thanks, man. We're going to say goodbye now and then continue to talk afterwards, do a fake goodbye. Thanks for coming on, Jordan Thomas.
Thank you for having me. Absolute pleasure as a big fan of the
Thank
podcast.
You, it's very kind of you. And I'll speak to you soon. In a minute, I mean. Bye.
Cool. Thank you.